We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits.
But this is Indiana. And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
What is going on, Pacer Nation? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden. On today's show, Michael J. Fauci is joining me once again, and we are going to do part one of the Mailbag podcast. And we thought it'd be a great time to get your thoughts, your questions on this upcoming series against the Milwaukee Bucks. But Fauci, before we jump into playoff conversation, some big news happened today. Would you let the people know what happened?
Absolutely. Tyrese Haliburton has officially made the Team USA roster. He will be playing with the best that the USA, the United States, has to offer, a star-studded group, and we got our star in that group.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great opportunity. There is only 11 players named right now on a 12-man roster. They are leaving that 12th spot open, which I think that's pretty interesting that they have decided to do that, but it's a great opportunity for Tyrese to do it. Tyrese is very excited about it, but not only is Tyrese Haliburton going to be joining Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and those kind of players, Caitlin Clark is officially a member of the Indiana Fever, and Indiana basketball is only getting better because Aliyah Boss and Caitlin Clark is going to be a dynamic duo for the Pacers, for the Fever, and the Pacers are in the playoffs, so it's a great time to be an Indiana basketball fan.
It really is. I mean, look, 36 nationally televised games for the Fever next year, I believe. So that's a lot of exposure right there. And the Pacers, I mean, that was a team that was scratching and clawing for originally like one nationally televised game, not counting NBA TV. Last year, they ended up earning a few more. I think next year, I'm excited to see where they're at. We're not expecting a monumental jump, but I am expecting more nationally televised games. So great time to be a fan of Indiana sports right now.
Absolutely, Fauci. And so while we're on this awesome trajectory of just talking about great things that are happening, we have some great listeners of this show that are excited. They've sent us in some great questions. But before we get into that, one more thing, just got to do some housekeeping. Ladies and gentlemen, merchandise is on the way. Now, I understand right now we've put out three new shirts. You can get those in sweatshirts, crew necks, tank tops, different things that you want. But make sure you guys check that link out in the bio. But coming shortly, we are going to have a Pacers playoff theme shirt that you are not going to want to miss out on. I think you guys are going to absolutely love it. The works, the artwork is being designed as we speak. It is not official yet. It is still in the making, but it will be available for the first home game of Pacers playoffs. So make sure you guys are on the lookout for that. So if you want to save your money for a playoff shirt, totally understand it, but I'm just letting you know we're going to have a playoff shirt with Smear the Deer as the theme. That's all I'm going to say.
Love it. Yeah, you're not going to want to miss this, guys, especially I think this is going to be a series that's going to go, past four games. So I think there is going to definitely be that opportunity to have that shirt, and I think it's going to be a pretty awesome memory. I personally love any type of playoff-related shirt that you have for years that you could look back on. Remember that series. I think this is going to be an awesome one for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we do have quite a few questions here, and I think there might be some that are a little bit similar, some that are kind of a repeat thing. And so tried to condense all those as possible, but I might have overlooked some. So, Focci, let's go ahead and get into it with question number one.
All right. Question number one. Loyal question provider, Christopher Lloyd. He said, Pacers have had the deepest bench in the league, but typically for the playoffs, coaches shorten it to 9 or even 8 guys who play. How do you think Carlisle will go in the playoffs, and who gets left off the bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at the roster and who's going to play, I think your starting five is pretty set.
Yes.
And then McConnell and Obi Toppin are your sixth and your seventh man. I think at this point, Jalen Smith is a very interesting candidate here as the eighth man. But I think Ben Shepherd might get more run than Jalen Smith does in this series, because I do think that Miles Turner is going to play a lot of minutes in this series. I don't know if you noticed this or not, Focci, but in that five-game stretch, Jalen Smith only played twice against the Milwaukee Bucks. Isaiah Jackson played in all five games. So it will that be interesting to see how they determine who plays in those minutes, because Isaiah Jackson played pretty good in those games. So I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic with everything we know right now going into game one with Giannis being in doubt to play. But I think their bench has been their strength, but they also have to do a good job of not allowing their bench to be what hurts them in the playoffs, because it is a margin for error with that team, knowing what they can do and what they can't do.
You know, I'm curious to see if that's during the span where Jalen was a little bit banged up. I do remember, because if you think about it this way, I believe it was Jalen Smith and Andrew Nembhard that were out in that in-season tournament championship against the Lakers. So I know that Nembhard got hurt in the game against the Bucks. Jalen, I'm wondering if it was right around that time or not. But in my opinion, in terms of what the rotation will look like, yeah, I think it's going to be very similar to what you mentioned. I think Ajax, McDermott, I think those are the odd guys out. Could McDermott play a couple minutes here or there? Yeah, anything's possible, but you kind of hope he doesn't. So I just think for Isaiah, I mean, hey, at times he's been a good matchup. So we'll see what happens, but I anticipate, like you mentioned, the starting five, and you got McConnell, you got Obi, Jalen, and Ben Shepherd. That's who I think is the 9 that gets minutes.
Absolutely, Patrick. Well, let's move on to our second question here from David Matillo. He said, does Tyrese Haliburton need to average 25 points for the Pacers to win?
Ironically, I went through all the games. The Bucks games for the Pacers. Tyrese averaged 27 points per game in those five games. Pacers obviously won 4 of them. The one time that he scored below 25, he had 22 points, 7 assists in the loss to Milwaukee. The playoffs is really where you want your guys to take their game to the next level. But I think that Tyrese needs to be somewhere between 22 to 25 points per game, and obviously double-digit assists, anywhere from 10 to 12. I think that makes you feel good. If he's right around 18 to 20 points per game, I don't feel that great about taking down the Bucks, because let's be honest, in the year of 2024, Tyrese has actually averaged just 17.2 points per game. So asking him to be up between that 22 to 25, I think that's something that you could hope to expect. Seeing him go from roughly 17 points per game to 27 points per game, that feels a little bit much to ask.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of those things where he's not been shooting the ball as well as he was. And I think that they needed him to be more of that guy than who they need him to be now, because they didn't have Pascal Siakam for any of those five games they played. And I think people do remember that, but it's just a nice reminder, like, okay, you didn't have Pascal Siakam, so now you're going to add that scoring into the mix. Obi Toppin's playing a lot better. TJ McConnell's playing a lot better. You don't necessarily need 25. I think you would like it. I think this is a good matchup for him to kind of get his footing right, because if Tyrese Haliburton has this entire week off, how does that help him get that hamstring a little bit healthier than it has been? Because I mean, we're seeing the guy do windmill dunks. We're seeing him do different things. So it's not like he's hurt or anything like that, but just a little bit of extra rest maybe to get that, you know, hamstring not as tight as it might be or whatever. It just, you can tell still that he doesn't have the same balance off the shot as he once did. And so I think Caitlin Cooper's talked about it a few different times about, you can tell how he doesn't slide the same way or put as much, you know, force when he plants his foot and things like that. So you're going to have to just continue to see Tyrese work through it, but I don't think he needs to average 25. I think if he can get close to, you know, 20, 22 a game, like, it'll be all right. It's going to be tough. I think the defense of the playoffs does intensify a little bit, but I've heard a lot of different podcasts today talking about Milwaukee, like, they need to outscore their opponent. Well, this is not the team to do that against. So will Indiana have an advantage there? And if they're playing Brooke Lopez and drop coverage against Tyrese Haliburton, will he, you know, just dominate that as well? I think there's a lot of things to look at here. And one thing I will say, that it's happened a little bit. We saw how it used to happen when Sabonis was here with Turner. You see centers guarding Sabonis and fours guarding Turner. We're starting to see that a little bit more with Siakam, because Siakam's not really that outside threat that Turner is. So I think you'll probably see some kind of matchup where maybe Brooke Lopez is matched up with Pascal Siakam, and you see Bobby Portis or Giannis on Miles trying to disrupt that pick and roll game with Tyrese. So maybe we'll see a little bit more pick and roll action with Pascal, if that's what the Bucks do, trying to bring Brooke on Pascal and try to hide him there a little bit, knowing that he's more of a down low player than he is an outside guy. But I think Indiana can kind of have their way with the Bucks bigs, especially if Giannis is out for game one.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes a massive difference. It is a whole shuffle for the Bucks. But in my opinion, I just think that if Tyrese is around 17, 18 points per game, you don't feel great about it unless he's averaging upwards of 15 assists. Yeah. You know, and I think that that's a lot for anybody to, you know, ask for or hope. But in my opinion, yeah, could he be between 22 to 25? I don't think he needs to be at 25, but you also don't want to see the Tyrese that is putting up four shots by halftime. I just don't think that that's going to be enough.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our next question.
Next question from the faithful ones, Chuck and Jamie. This is a long one, long-winded. All right, so you tell me if you want me to go through all five.
Well, it's not long-winded. They're giving us five options here.
Sure, yes. Not long-winded, but a lot to discuss. Five major things have changed since we last played the Bucks. One, no Ben Mathurin to punch back versus the Bucks' physicality. Two, Tyrese's regression since injury. Three, no Buddy Hield. Four, the addition of Pascal Siakam. Five, Aaron Nesmith's regression from injury. The question is, which will have the most significant impact?
Yeah, so I there's two that I was really close between, Fauci, but I think the addition of Siakam has to be the answer here. Yeah, it's you're bringing on a power forward all-star that's going to change the game, a guy that can get you a bucket that's not Tyrese Haliburton, and that really makes this team more dynamic, because when you're playing the Bucks, like, you know Dame Lillard has not had a great overall season series against the Pacers, but Chris Middleton still hit timely shots, and that's one thing that we know Chris Middleton can do. He's not been healthy, Chris Middleton, and he's getting older. But have no fear, Chris Middleton will get a bucket off in a game, and it's going to be a big impact shot, because that's what Chris Middleton does. So, you know, I think that having Pascal just really kind of helps, you know, even out the playing field, really, because of the way he's able to get downhill, the way he's able to bring the ball up the court and not always have it in Tyrese's hands, playing with the second unit a little bit more. Like, who is going to really stop Pascal Siakam? I don't necessarily think that they have a great stopper over there. Like, if Andre Jackson Jr. or Jay Crowder or, like, their best options are Bobby Portis, like, that doesn't intimidate me. That makes me feel pretty good. And like I mentioned earlier, if they put Brooke Lopez on him, like, can he use his speed to blow by him? I think that's really, really important. So I think Pascal Siakam's addition is just massive for this team. And I do want to talk about one more after this, but the addition of Siakam is clearly the number one for me.
That's number one for me. I just think the other stuff that Chuck and Jamie mentioned, hey, they're all big things. Like, Mathurin was a really great rebounder in this series. Some of the best rebounding games of his career came against the Bucks. That timely steal that he had against Giannis, it was awesome. Tyrese was, as I touched on, you know, averaging like 27 points per game, you know, earlier in that those series against the Bucks. So, but I think Pascal Siakam is the biggest difference. The Bucks have had some additions. You added a Patrick Beverley, but they didn't add anyone of the caliber of a Pascal Siakam. I think that the Pacers had absolutely no one to match up with Giannis in the past, whether you threw an Obi Toppin or an Anthony Smith at him. They were either undersized or just outmatched. Giannis averaged 42.2 points per game against the Pacers,
yeah,
including games of 54 and a career high of 64. Well, we got Pascal Siakam to throw at him now, and that, to me, feels like the biggest difference.
If you watch the last game the Pacers played against the Bucks, really the last two games they played, at the beginning of January, January 1st, and I think it was 3rd, those two games, Indiana did a great job kind of building the wall on Giannis. So I think they have something that worked that they can put in place to try to eliminate what he can do. But if you do that and you put three guys packing in the paint, it's going to allow other guys to be open. And now that Giannis has this injury, who knows how severe it will be. Do you need to still add that same amount of attention to him where you're maybe giving up open shots to other guys? So I think that that's a very important point. But if you look at what if you look what Benedict Mathurin did over this series in five games, 18 points a game, Fadji, in five games for Ben Mathurin. He was the third highest scorer for the Pacers against Milwaukee. So you're going to lose that. But I think if you swap that out with Pascal Siakam, I think you can get 11 points here, you know, 10 points here, because Bruce Brown had 11 points in the series. Obi Toppin had 10, Isaiah, Jalen, TJ, they all had 10. Aaron Nesmith only had 7. So I'm assuming you'll get an uptick in minutes and scoring from Aaron Nesmith, number one. Andrew Nembhard only played in 14 minutes a game and only played in 3 of the 5 and only averaged 6.7 points. So I think you're going to see an uptick there from those guys. So I think the scoring is going to balance out, even though you will miss Mathurin and what he can bring, just because he is kind of an X-factor type of player that this team really could miss in a playoff series. But Mathurin played great against the Bucks this year. It's one of those things that I really want to talk about, just because how good he was in that matchup. And I feel like it kind of was like a more of an old school type matchup too, which Mathurin kind of thrives in. So I will miss not having Mathurin available for this series, because he was jawing quite a bit. Like him and Malik Beasley went back and forth a few different times. I was sitting courtside for one of those games, that the game that he was defending Giannis. I think Giannis dropped 50 something in that game. It was like our first game in the City Edition uniforms too. So I did just want to say, not having Mathurin is a big loss, but I think you can kind of figure that out and make up for that with Pascal Siakam.
I completely agree. And I think the Pacers, you know, that's been a question for in the beginning. What are the Pacers going to do without Mathurin? You know what? They've been all right. They've been able to make it work, but he did have some really big games in that series. And I'm looking at a 26 points and 11 rebounds. I'm looking at another game where he had 25 points and 13 rebounds.
Yeah, he was big.
And very efficient shooting. So I just think overall, Mathurin actually played some of his best games of this season against the Bucks. So many games where he was a positive. So, yeah, it's definitely a loss, but I do think the addition of Pascal Siakam is a bigger significance compared to the loss of Mathurin.
That was a great question by Chuck and Jamie, so thank you for that. I really appreciate that. So let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, PACE. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Now, let's get back to the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Let's move on to question number four. This comes from Q, not the player on Survivor, but a Pacer fan by the name of Q. He said, with our defense improving every month since the last time we played them, do you think this will be a series where Rick will have a better defensive plan for Giannis, or do you think it will be like earlier this year where we just have to get timely stops and hope to outscore them?
Look, you talked about it before. The Pacers ended up defending Giannis better in the later games. And when I say better, I mean he scored 30 instead of 64 or 54. That goes a long way. I mean, Giannis is a guy that can average over 30, you know, on any given night, any given year. Look, you're never going to shut him down. Timely stops is what you hope for. If you hold him to 30, you feel good about it. I do think, like, touching on a point that we made before, the addition of Siakam, I think is going to be something that's going to make a big difference, because I think the Pacers were trying to throw everything they could at Giannis. And Aaron Nesmith, he's been asked to do a lot. I think to be able to ask to be guarding Giannis, that's a tall task for anybody. So I think the Pacers match up size-wise better this year. I think that Siakam's, just his build is more of what you look forward to in regards to who could guard Giannis or who can't. So I think that, you're still looking for the timely stops. You're never going to shut him down. But I also feel that this Pacers team, look, in a seven-game series, could Giannis go off on one or two games? Definitely. That could very well happen. Is he going to torch us for 50 a night for seven games while he's hurt? Probably not. But I think the Pacers are better equipped this time around to stop Giannis than they were in the past.
I think they're just a better collective defensive unit with the yes. players they have currently in the lineup. They have more size. They've got, you know, longer wingspans. They've just got more of a defensive-minded presence out there. So I think it's going to help. But even if you watch the Cavs game a couple of nights ago, you can see where that defense, if it's not locked in, then it's a problem. So Indiana really doesn't have any, you know, I keep saying this and I feel bad. I keep saying this because I guess just lack of a better term, room for error with what they're doing defensively. They just really don't. They have to lock in. And when you know you have three great players out there in Middleton, Giannis, and Dame, you can't slack at all. So even if Giannis is 80%, 70%, like, that's still 70% of one of the best players in the league. So you're not going to be able just to completely erase that and just kind of live with it. So I think Milwaukee's, I mean, we know that Doc Rivers has his flaws as a coach, but there are things that he's good at. And I think he did a really good job of trying to fix some of the things that Adrian Griffin did not have established when he was there earlier this season. So the Bucks, they've lost three of their last, they're 3-7 in their last 10 games. They're not playing the greatest basketball. But I will just say this, you can never count them out. I think Giannis is going to be a problem defensively. He's going to draw fouls. How do you try to keep your guys out of foul trouble? Because you don't want to get Pascal in foul trouble. Does that mean Obi Toppin gets more minutes? Does he get more of a try on him? Do you go with Jalen or Isaiah on him to try to throw some size at him? Do you put Miles on him? I think there's a lot of different things the Pacers can try, But I don't necessarily think I would want to be throwing Aaron Nesmith on him at this point, because I feel like Aaron Nesmith gives up way too much size, and I think Aaron Nesmith is going to be more critical for defending the perimeter with Dame if Nembhard gets in foul trouble, or Chris Middleton.
If you put Nesmith on him, Giannis is going to get to the free throw line more.
Yeah.
And it's going to put Nesmith in trouble. And all of a sudden, you're not going to be able to get that type of production. And more importantly, the defensive production that you need out of him in this series. So, yeah, I want to be able to avoid that, you know, at all costs. If you could have a Nesmith on, like a Chris Middleton or anything like that, being able to help on Dame, things like that, that could go a long way. But next question that we had was Chase Sasson. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Hope I got that right, Chase. Two questions. We had a two-parter. One. TJ has been unbelievable in unplayable. It's complete opposite. TJ has been unplayable in previous playoff series due to his inability to shoot from three. Is this something we should be concerned about, especially with him being the reason our bench is so successful? You want to answer this, and then I'll ask the next one after that.
Well, go ahead and just ask the second one, because we kind of already answered it. So
second one is, do you think we're better equipped to defend Giannis?
Yeah, we just answered that.
I think we did cover that.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. Don't want to leave you out there, Chase. Thank you for the question, but hopefully we answered that in the last question we just answered. But yeah, going back to TJ, I mean, obviously I just talked about how TJ is shooting like absurd from three over the last 22 games, like really shooting the ball well. I think that at this point, any of us that are doubting TJ McConnell's ability right now, just take a step back and say, okay, look, this man always proves everybody wrong time and time again. He only played in four of these games. They went 3-1 in the games that he played, but there was one game, and it was the very first game they played against the Bucks. He did not get into the game because he was not the matchup that they wanted out there, and they won that game. And it was the game that Ben Mathurin had some really nice defensive stops on Giannis at the end there, and it was a really fun game. But you know what? He still averaged 10 points in 17 minutes, 48% from the field. He only took one three-point attempt per game in those four games, so clearly he wasn't shooting as much as he is now, because his role was different. I think that at this point now, TJ McConnell has kind of been the engine of that second unit. So I would say he is not unplayable whatsoever. You're going to need TJ McConnell, and I think that you're going to probably see some times when you see McConnell and Halliburton out there together for stretches, one, for defensive purposes, but two, also just having secondary ball handling. And McConnell has shown to hit the three ball much better as of late. If Milwaukee wants to allow him to shoot that, then I think he's going to take it, and he might make them pay for it.
First of all, this is 3J McConnell that we're talking about right now. But now, look, in my opinion, this is the best, or at least the most consistent TJ McConnell we have ever seen. He has drastically improved as a three-point shooter from years past that you mentioned. You're right. Yes, in the past, there was a time in the playoffs, it's like, you know what, for McConnell, I just don't see it. It's not a great fit. You know, the teams were giving him so much space. He has more confidence now. And I think that he has, just from a three-point standpoint, I get it. We're coming off of a game where he went 3 of 4 from three. It's probably never going to get better than that. But the way that he's playing, what he's bringing to the table, no one is providing the spark that he is providing on a nightly basis to this Pacers team, and we have nothing even close to that. So I think that the bench, it's thinner than earlier. We already talked about the loss of Mathurin and how once upon a time you had guys like Buddy Hield, or even just more depth in a Bruce Brown. You don't have those guys, but what you do have is a guy in TJ McConnell that scored in double figures 15 of the last 16 games. It's something that we need. McConnell, in one of those games against the Bucks, was actually a plus 31. He scored 16 points. He had 9 assists and 0 turnovers. I feel that TJ McConnell right now has earned the minutes that he will get in this series. I'm not saying that he'll receive an uptick in minutes, but I'm saying he's earned the minutes that he will get.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think TJ McConnell, I mean, he's played so good, guys. Like, I just don't think there's any way that we can just write him off at this point. I think just continue to trust the steady hand, and Rick Carlisle really trust him. So could he have a JJ Barea type of impact on this Pacers team like the Mavericks had with JJ Barea when Carlisle was there? I think you can kind of see the similarities. Not the same game overall, right? But just the impact that they had on their teams, I think that they're very similar. But let's move on to question number 6 of the part 1 mailbag. It is from Aman Bakshi. He said, we have experience with the Bucks all season, but Doc is adding a wild card with his playoff tenure. What do you think we need to do to leverage our experience or lack of in the playoff to cover the Bucks successfully?
Look, Doc's problems in the past has been his in-game adjustments. I think it's something that's always plagued him. That is the knock on Doc. But I think this is a better Pacers team defensively than, you know, what we saw with the Bucks saw before. But it's also a better Bucks defensive team than when we ran into the Bucks. They had major problems defensively. They were actually a much better offensive team than what we've seen. Experience, it's the one thing that it's really hard to make up for. Yes, Carlisle has the playoff experience. He's won a ring, but some players have some playoff experience, but a lot don't. But I think the one thing that you really can't simulate for the Bucks is the Pacers' fast tempo. Doc hasn't coached against the Pacers this year. Hopefully that's something that he might struggle a little bit with. Of course, he has plenty of film on us, but I also just feel that that's something that's going to be hard to simulate. And other than that, I think you just got to be ready to play. I think the one thing that could work in our favor is the pressure that's on Milwaukee in this series. The Pacers, it's not to say that we're just happy to be there, but the Bucks have legitimate expectations, and if it doesn't work, they need to make major changes. I think the Pacers could play a little bit more free, and if the Pacers can play to their strengths, the Bucks are going to be in trouble.
I'm just looking at the stats here, Fauci, from the last 26 games since the All-Star break. The Pacers are 16-10. The Bucks are 14-12. Indiana is second in offensive rating. Milwaukee is 13th. If you go to defensive rating, let's see here. Milwaukee is 17th at 113.2. Indiana is 114. So they're right there, middle of the pack. So not much of a difference. If you look at net rating, the Bucks are 16th and the Pacers are 4th. So the Pacers have been playing much, much better. And then if you go to pace, the Pacers are still 4th in the league. But if you look at the whole season, Milwaukee was up there in pace for the majority of the season. Now, over the last 26 games, they're down to 18th in pace. So
that's a big difference.
They've slowed down their game. They're playing a different style with Doc, and it's more methodical. It's not as fast, not as up-tempo, and they've changed things a little bit. And, you know, I don't think the results have really, you know, showed much, right? 14-12 is not great. It's around 500. Now, the Pacers, 16-10 is not much better, but it's two games better. And I think the Pacers are just in a better spot than they were as a team overall with the roster they have now compared to the team that beat the Bucks 5 times in a row. So it is a different dynamic with Doc, but I think Rick Carlisle is a great coach. And I know there's been a lot of ups and downs with Rick Carlisle as a coach, but I think if Doc Rivers was here as the coach, people would be more upset with Doc Rivers than they are with Rick Carlisle.
Couldn't agree more.
So I think, you know, you've got two veteran coaches that know what it takes to win in the playoffs. I think both have really kind of struggled over the last couple of, you know, probably 10 years, really, both of them, to really kind of exceed expectations from what their teams are supposed to do. So it'll be an interesting chess match, but I think that with Rick Carlisle going up against Doc, you probably feel like the edge is in your favor if you're a Pacer.
I do. I mean, look, I know, yes, Rick's ring was a while ago, but it's like the Boston Celtics won that ring in 2008.
Yeah.
With a team that was, you traded for Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, and that was a very experienced team. What has Doc done with a team that wasn't built to win at all? He hasn't done much with those teams. So yeah. I just feel that for what Carlisle's been able to do with this group, I think that we've seen a lot. We've seen, you know, a really high ceiling. We hope to ever be able to reach that ceiling. But I do give me Rick Carlisle over Doc Rivers any day, because I truly believe if it doesn't work out for Doc Rivers in Milwaukee, this could be his last head coaching job in the NBA, because it has not worked out in Philly. It didn't work out in LA. And, you know, I think that this is sort of the end of the line. While I think for Rick Carlisle, what he's been able to prove is that this man's an offensive genius, and he's turned this team around very quickly. So, yeah, I feel good about the Pacers in this series. And you can't make up for experience, but I think that I prefer where Indiana's at right now in current time compared to where the Bucks are.
Let me just say this real quick, because if you look at the net rating since the All-Star break, the top five teams, Fauci, Boston Celtics, Denver Nuggets, Oklahoma City Thunder, the New York Knicks. That's your one and your two seeds in both East and Western Conference. The Pacers are fourth. They're right there with the top of the East and the West in terms of net rating. So they're playing better basketball. They've had some bad losses, don't get me wrong, but I think it's pretty good when you're right there at the top with the top two teams in the East and the top two teams in the West in net rating. And I think that says a lot about the way this team is playing basketball as of now. I just want to bring that point up.
No, I think that's an eye-opening stat right there, because, yeah, those teams look like you can make an argument to say, hey, OKC wasn't really built to kind of win it all. But I think that you look at the other, they're having a great year. The other teams are built to win it all. The Celtics, the Nuggets, those are teams that people expect to be in the NBA Finals playing against each other. When you hear the Pacers in there, all of a sudden, I mean, you got to get excited about that because it kind of feels that the Bucks are limping into this playoff series. I mean, to be literal, I think Giannis is limping in. And I think that right now the Pacers are going in with confidence, feeling good. And that 1 week off that we've asked for Tyrese Haliburton to have all year, it's finally come. You can make an argument at the right time. Like, yeah, maybe it could have been more beneficial a month or two ago, but he's finally getting some rest. And I think that this team, between Obi Toppin being able to get healthy, they're going to be deep. And you know Milwaukee is not as deep as the Pacers. So I think it's going to be a collective effort, but I'm real excited. But the next question that we have, Schwartz, Ruder, and Carson Stafford said, seeing as our game plan is to run a lot, do you think Carlisle keeps up using a full 10-man rotation and just cuts back on minutes?
Yeah, so Carson, this was not actually his question. He was very similar to this. I just want to throw it in there. So Carson, if you didn't get the exact wording on your question, I know you wanted us to talk about the bench and kind of that rotation, which we did talk about a little bit earlier. I think might have been the first question. But looking at this, I think the Pacers still have to play their fast pace. But I think they have to be very smart about how many minutes they allow to their bench guys. I think that going nine deep is fine, but I think that's the deepest I would go. I think Ben Shepherd needs to play in this series. I really do. I think that Ben Shepherd's defense is very important. And I think that you're going to need a big to kind of spare Miles some minutes. But I also think that if your bigs aren't playing well, maybe go a little bit small ball and go Obi and Pascal at times just to kind of see what that wrinkle can throw in there as well. But I think that if you go nine man, play your pace. They've been doing it all season long. They know exactly how to play and play for 48 minutes. I understand that it's a grind in the NBA playoffs, but we also know there's a lot more timeouts too. So more time to catch your breath, more time to get breaks and things like that, which plays a huge factor in things when you've got these TV timeouts and different things. So I think the Pacers are fine playing their pace. Playing a nine-man rotation is what I would do, but I think that McDermott, as much as he is a veteran on this team, I don't think he should see the floor. I really don't. I'll be very baffled if he does. He did not see the floor against Miami for a reason. I'm hanging my hat on that was probably the most playoff game atmosphere that the Pacers really had. And if they lose that game, they're probably the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference two Sundays ago. So you got to, you know, realize Rick Carlisle knows the weaknesses of his roster. He's not going to play guys just to play them, but if they need some offense going, it wouldn't shock me if McDermott got in there because they need some shooting out there. But I don't think that he'll rely on Doug for very many minutes in this series. If he does, I'll be shocked.
No, McDermott shouldn't see the court. But a nine-man rotation is where I see the max at. But a lot of people had a problem with, and you and I talked about this, the game against Cleveland. It should have been treated like a playoff game. You look at this and you see that in that game, Turner played 28 minutes, Siakam 32. I mean, come on. Like in a 48-minute game, I think you got to see those players. It's not to say pushing 40 minutes, but it's like you want to see them at like 38 or close to it. Like Haliburton was at 35. Okay, yeah, that's fine. But I definitely don't think that you want to give too many minutes to some of these guys on the bench, like a Jalen Smith who's playing like 20 minutes. I mean, that could easily come down. McDermott, you don't want to see him. Ben Shepherd, I think, is a little bit unpredictable. How many minutes he'll play could be a little bit all over the place. But I do think that from your starters, for a guy like Pascal Siakam, I think you want him pushing 38 to 40 minutes in this series. You're going to need him. And then the rest, you just kind of hope that these are guys that aren't in foul trouble. For Turner, he's typically someone that you always kind of see around 31 minutes. Could you get 35 to 38 out of him? Things like that you really want to see. So in my opinion, it's a nine-man rotation, but you want to have those starters all playing about five more minutes more than usual.
And I will say this too with Turner, like we saw him play a lot of minutes against the Miami Heat the last time the Pacers were in the bubble playoffs. Sabonis was hurt. Turner did not play good in that game one, but the next three games, he was very, very good in that game or in that series. So I think Miles Turner, the way he came out against the Hawks, I mean, he was so locked and loaded. I think he is more ready for the playoffs than ever before. He's had a taste of it, and it's been quite a few years now since he's been back to it. So he's just chomping at the bit to get that opportunity. But I think part of the reason why that Cavs game did not sit as well with the Pacers maybe as it might not have been as serious as it was for them as it was for the fans, because they knew that if they just beat the Hawks on Sunday, they had that saving grace, right? And nobody wants to hear that, but I think that did play a little bit in the back of their mind. Like, okay, if we lose this game, we still have one that's probably going to win at home against the Hawks, right? You can't have that mentality. And I think that's why Carlisle was so upset with how they played in that overall game on Sunday, because they were so bad in the first half defensively. Like, it was just a joke. But I do think that he realized, like, this team is just not mature enough yet to handle business on the road. So I think that they just kind of had in the back of their mind, like, well, we can get the next one. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, yeah, we suck tonight, whatever, but like, we could have been better. Like, no, you can't have that mentality, and they'll learn from that. But that game against the Cavs, I think that they just, they knew the importance of it, but they also knew they had something to fall back on if they didn't win.
I think everything worked out. Yeah, if they won that game, things would have been different. The Pacers could have moved up, in the standings and all that. But it is what it is. I'm excited about this matchup against the Bucks, but there is no more of that mentality of, oh, we'll get the next one. This is a stage that many guys have never been on before, and then they better be ready, because you got to play like there is no tomorrow. But you ready for this next question?
Yeah, let's wrap this part one up, Fachi. We're going to end it here with a fun question from Dalton Chubb, who he's like, you know what? Screw the Bucks series. I don't even care about this. Just tell me about your guys' favorite playoff memory. So he said his is the Hibbert block on Melo or Reggie banking in the three against the Nets. Fachi, any of those at the top of your list, or do you have one that tops that?
Hands down is the Roy Hibbert block on Melo. For me, it was my physical background on my phone for about 4 years until I had a girlfriend that became pretty vocal that I had to change it and have a picture of both of us. That went back and forth. So, eventually, sadly, I'll admit it, I did have to change the background. But, at this point, I would have had that background for, about 12 years or so. So, 11, 12 years. So, that things had to change eventually. But look, Reggie has countless incredible game winners. You can't go wrong depending on, I'd say, your age group. That Roy Hibbert block on Melo is just something that I remember where I was, who I was with, my reaction, and I just don't think I'll ever forget that moment. So for me, that's definitely my favorite playoff moment.
Yeah, it's up there for sure. I think for me, honestly, the moment that I got the most excited was when Paul George dunked on Birdman.
That was
that
awesome.
Dunk was absolutely incredible. I was such a big fan at that moment. Reggie Miller on the call, calling it a Kodak moment. That was, to me, the, oh my God, we have arrived. We are here. And the fact that Paul George like slapped LeBron James at half court for a high five, I know nobody liked that in the moment. I hated it in the moment. But just looking back on it, how cool that was.
It was.
The three that he hit to tie the game up was just incredible too. Like, you just kind of felt like you were seeing the star emerge. And that's what made the like losing of Paul George when he left and asked for the trade, like, that hurt even more. But like, you don't have the Hibbert block if it's not for Paul George ascending, right? And David West and all the incredible shots he hit in those series. Like, I'll never forget, I think it was the Wizards series when David West just went off in one of those games, and it was just like, man.
He killed the Hawks. He had a couple.
He big, did have a big game against the Hawks. There was one against the Wizards. I can't remember. I think it was like game three or game four, but it was a big game, and Nene was killing us. I was like, we couldn't stop Nene with what he was doing, and Hibbert was kind of going through a little bit of a slump there, especially in that Hawks series when we went seven games in the first round. But David West in that game six on the road, oh my God, that was such a big, big performance from him. I mean, he really just put the clamps down and said, all right, I'm carrying you guys like TJ McConnell's been doing the last month for the Pacers. So, I will just say there's a lot of fun memories. And if I want to go back, obviously the Reggie shot over Michael Jordan, game four.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's an iconic one. I really wasn't old enough to remember 8 points, 9 seconds.
And that's exactly why I didn't put those memories in there. Like Reggie against the Knicks, you can insert three or four different memories. The banked deep three against the Nets was an incredible moment as well that Dalton pointed out. But I think that those, I was just a little bit on the younger side. Like when that block happened on Melo, I just feel like that was at a stage where I was just glued to the TV, old enough, really like taking everything in, and just absolutely incredible stuff that I will never forget.
And one that I think is a little bit slept on was that Pacers Raptors series, the 2-7 series.
That was an incredible series.
That was a lot of fun. The Pacers.
Solomon Hill's basket just ruled too short by like 0.1 of a second. I mean, it was just, that was a really competitive series that, just the Pacers just during that span at Paul George, it was tough to, they just couldn't get over that hump to be able to get back. And I hate how, by not winning and get out of the first round, eventually, obviously, it leads to him asking for a trade not too long later. But
yeah, that was a fun series though, because you had Miles Turner playing power forward with Yamahimi in his rookie season. Like, it was just crazy. George Hill was still on the team, Monte Ellis. It was a fun series. Like, they made it a 7-game series and had a chance to win it at one point. They just had some blunders there. Frank Vogel ends up getting fired, I think, after that series too, right?
Yeah, he did. Larry Bird with the like awful, like every good coach should, you know, after 3 years or something. Yeah. Like, it was like, what do you even mean?
He was
like,
here for
what?
Five.
It was like, yeah, that was painful. But
losing Frank was painful. But I did love that team. I mean, I know that they weren't like great, but it was fun to watch them compete. And it just kind of showed you where Paul George was. So that was the big bummer there. But I think that's going to wrap it up for the mailbag, Flatchy. Go ahead and let everybody know where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, please go to youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast, and leave us a 5-star, excuse me, subscribe and comment on the channel, but leave us a 5-star rating review wherever you get your audio podcast at. So I really appreciate everybody supporting this show, whether it's YouTube, whether it's buying merch, whatever it is. You guys are the best. We really appreciate it. Congratulations, Tyrese Haliburton, on making the Olympic team once again. And also, congratulations to Caitlin Clark on being the newest member of the Indiana Fever. But Flatchy, if you're excited to come back for part 2 tomorrow, then hit me with those 3 words.
Let's go, Pacers!